passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This group, we are sticking together.
That brings us here today, putting words down on a brand new sheet of paper, brand new chapter, brand new book that we like to call All Elite Wrestling.
I guess we never really sat down and talked to each other about, okay, we have this opportunity to now change wrestling. How do you see it? How do you see it? How do you see it? How we make this work? Maybe in the end, you know, we had the Bucks and their vision. We had my vision, and then we had Cody's vision. And all of our visions were different from one another. I would say mine was more similar to what the Bucks had envisioned, and Cody's was out there. It was much different.
Someone told me to save this promo, but I honestly don't know if I'm going to get the chance, so I'm going to do it now.
And it's very sad, and I, you know, not something any of us wanted to happen, I think. But I believe that Cody's got something else, you know, in the works. I'm not sure about that, but we'll see.
I carry every ounce of anti-monopoly sentiment on my shoulders. I held every grain of the revolution in my hand, and each and every one of you cheer. You want to ask why I won't turn heel? It's because you cheered me when I needed the most. When it says there is more than one royal family in wrestling, I am talking about me and all of us.
You know, as you know, I guess probably a lot of fans know now, you know, it's essentially now just, it's Tony's show. And, you know, of course, he's always going to listen to our advice, and he's going to take our suggestions to heart.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, February 20th, 2021. And today in the program, we'll be talking about Cody and whatnot, but I'm not supposed to set up that intro. My co-host, Chris Gullo, is. Hello.
Yes, hello. It's good to be here on another beautiful Sunday morning. And we're going to discuss Cody leading AEW and what does that mean for AEW and potentially the other company.
What other company?
WWE, but I'm just teasing. We'll get into more details later. I was just doing a tease. But also on this show, we're going to actually discuss WWE stock shares rising. We're going to kind of talk about WWE business as the future projections, as far as where do we see it in the next few years. We'll break down some ratings and the effect of Big Bang Theory on Dynamite. And we're going to discuss Elimination Chamber as far as some comparisons of the money that WWE gets from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia compared to some other financials.
Yes.
And a lot more.
a lot more. I was maneuvering with my microphone there. So let's take it from the top here. Thoughts on the Super Bowl. Let's go from the first down, the kickoff going forward. Thoughts on the Super Bowl. Rams taking the big win, taking Vince Lombardi trophy home.
RA game. I mean, wasn't the greatest game, wasn't the worst game. Commercials were all right. I enjoyed the Larry David commercial very much.
Did you scan the QR code?
Yes, I did. I did. That might have been the most brilliant commercial ever, to be honest with you.
And that was for Coinbase, correct?
Yes. Yep.
So now you're a crypto investor. You already were a crypto investor.
I already was. Yeah, I had to scan the QR code to know what it was. It could have been anything.
So you have Bitcoin and Dogecoin. Last we discussed this, is that correct? So,
I actually never had Bitcoin. I had Dogecoin, and I have now sold Dogecoin.
So do you have any crypto currently?
Right now, I have zero crypto.
You had it through the Robinhood app?
Yeah. So now I have stocks through three companies. I bought very tiny shares of some powerhouses, Netflix, Amazon, and Tesla.
Okay. So if you buy crypto, I don't know how any of this works. You bought crypto through Robinhood. So you didn't have to have a wallet. You didn't have to have Coinbase. Which I think is what you have. Anyway, I think I own Coinbase stock, but I'm not sure. the viewership for the Super Bowl, as we know, all viewership is down. So viewership was down year over year for the Super Bowl. Is that correct?
No.
What?
I don't think so. Let's see. No, it's flip flopped.
What happened? I thought this is the as we've been talking about for, you know, some 5, 6, 7 years, cable is on its deathbed. It's almost over for cable. So the Super Bowl is down again, right? It's all streaming. It was all streaming this year, correct?
No. 99.2 million up from the 91.6 in traditional TV, we should say.
Almost 100 million if you add in the streaming. Sports Media Watch, which is a good ratings website, had the number of streaming as 6 million devices, 11 million viewers, but in years prior, there doesn't seem to have been a differentiation between devices and users. But it does, even when you include the streaming, this is well up from last year. And when you include the streaming, it was even more than 2020, even more than 2019. Kind of, I'm not doing the math here, but pretty close to what it was in 2018. What do you think the reasoning is for that? We'll talk about wrestling in a moment.
I can't think of all the networks, but Peacock was attached to NBC, and I believe the last couple Super Bowls were CBS and Fox. And at that time, CBS, I don't think Paramount Plus was a thing. Fox may have had Tubi, but I think this large scale of a streaming service with the network that had the Super Bowl, I think, has something to do with it.
Okay. Maybe it was the great work rate of the conference finals of all the great playoff games. Who knows? Just to follow up on what we talked about last week, WrestleTix had the capacity, of course, it was sold out. The Super Bowl had the capacity at 66,824. Did the NFL exaggerate the attendance? Well, they reported, and this is from the LA Times, I imagine it's directly from the NFL, 70,048 at the stadium. So that's a difference of a little over 3,000. So WrestleTix number does not include suites. It's possible that there were 3,000 people in the suites. I would imagine if there's any event that the suites are going to be filled for, it's going to be the Super Bowl. That could be 3,000 in the suites. So this is not an exaggeration. If it's an exaggeration, it's not an exaggeration on the scale of WrestleMania in this instance. So interesting things we're learning because WrestleTix is counting the dots. So what else is new in the world? This isn't even the world of professional wrestling. What's new?
It was a very newsworthy week, as we found out that Cody and Brandi Rhodes have officially left All Elite Wrestling.
Yes, this news broke on Tuesday, and we have statements from Tony Khan and from Cody, Brandi as well. We will read the statements from Tony and from Cody here.
So this is from Tony. Cody and Brandi Rhodes were integral to the launch of All Elite Wrestling. Cody's ability combined with his boldness and his passion for industry and his love for community outreach helped AEW deliver on our mission to give fans what they needed for far too long. something new, innovative, and lasting. Brandi helped us shape the AEW story, and I appreciate how hard she fought for us both in the ring and out of the ring, competing in the women's division while advancing our efforts at inclusion and civic causes, including great partnerships with Culture City and the American Heart Association. I have immense respect and appreciation for Cody and Brandi, and I wish them both as they move on from AEW. Thank you, Cody and Brandi.
Signed.
This is Tony Khan, CEO, President, General Manager, and Head of Creative.
Okay.
All Elite Wrestling. Is that Head of Creative signature? Is that new?
No.
Or has he been doing that for a while? Okay. That's the first time I noticed it.
No. Yes. And then the statement from Cody. I don't know if this is quite long. I don't know if we need to read all of it, but read it until you're satisfied. You can abridge it as you see fit.
Yeah. So I've loved my time at AEW. Amazing locker room, amazing fans, amazing people. The Revolution was indeed televised, and I've been incredibly lucky to be part of that. First, I want to thank Tony Khan. He's taken the baton and run with it, and it was an honor to work for him and to know him on a personal level. He's a beautiful soul. Obviously, need to thank my incredible wife and mother, my baby girl, Brandi, and for all her love and support through the journey together and the amazing relationship she fostered with Culture City and the American Heart Association. I also need to thank Nick and Matt Jackson. These two, whatever they know it or not, took an undesired and non-confident little club and gifted me the confidence to become the leader of the pack. Kenneth Omega, Chris Jericho, Chicken, we started the fire. I must thank Tim with Greg M., Greg W. and the amazing production crew who understood and captured the vision with such grace. And then he names a lot of the talents and whatnot too, but yes. I think that gives the big gist there.
Yes. Including Harrington is named here. Did you notice that? Yes. referring to Chris Harrington, Mookie. So we had heard, I believe it's January 19th is when he cuts this promo. And just after the news has broken that Cody is working without a contract. So you were telling me just before we went to air, Gull, that you had predictions about Cody. Is this something that you predicted on our prediction episode?
Well, not for him being involved. But I predicted that 2022 was going to see another new promotion. And I thought immediately, now this is before any of the WWE talk came out and it was being reported. My immediate reaction when I found this news was he's going to start his own wrestling company. And who's involved? Is Jeff Jarrett involved? Is someone else involved? Like, I think, and there are a couple other people had a similar thought process to I did. I saw the Google image of, on Twitter of Cody Rhodes and Jeff Jarrett with Cody Rhodes with the Global Force title that was being shared quite a bit.
Yes. From years ago.
Yes.
To be clear.
That was my immediate thought was, okay, he did something, but it's clearly not his vision anymore. He probably doesn't have any real power or anything. He's going to try something else with someone else.
So I did breaking news on Tuesday when this news broke, but just to, hopefully we'll go into some more depth here. Cody asked for his release, I believe 2016, not somebody that the online internet fan base, at least those who are engaged online and make comments online or maybe have podcasts that are influential and things of that nature. We're not very excited about the prospect of Cody being on the indies. How's that going to work out? This is somebody who never had a match, I don't believe, before his WWE run, before he went into W developmental. Then he put out this list and people laughed at. You're gonna wrestle Shibata, and he's got the Young Bucks. And Trevor Lee, remember him? Chris Hero and thing. Bola. He thought he was going to go to Bola, which he did. But he earned that fan base's respect. And as I talked about on Tuesday, I was at All In, and there was nobody more over than Cody Rhodes on that night. I think. What's happened here, as I was putting these slides together, I remember realizing that, really wrestling in many ways, when you think about it, is just a bunch of men
dealing with their daddy issues, you might say, whether it's Vince or whomever. So this is one of the few, if people are watching on YouTube, one of the few images that I could find of Vince and Dusty Rhodes together from, this is probably the late 70s and in one of Dusty Rhodes' appearances in WWWF. But I think Cody, the impression I have, so this will be all speculation, as the departure of Cody Rhodes from AEW likely to WWE has been a great event for wrestling media monetization, I'm sure. But I imagine that he wants to be a booker and not only be a wrestling star, but to be a booker like his dad was, memorably, for Jim Crockett Promotions, for Florida. So it'll be interesting to see how this works out for him in WWE, because we haven't seen yet. You know, there really hasn't been anyone I know. Who's the WUK guy who did some dark appearances for AEW and then signed
Ben Carter.
There it is. That was his pre-WWE name. I forget who knows what his name is.
Yeah.
But this is really the first move of any kind of somebody who is under contract with AEW going to WWE. And how will Vince deal with somebody like that? History has shown us, whether it was Dusty Rhodes himself, whether it was Harley Race becoming the king, whether it was Dusty becoming the yellow polka dots, the caricature American dream, will Vince, in his wisdom, try to reimagine Cody into something? Cody was reimagined already in WWE into Stardust. I don't think he'll be in the Stardust gear at any point. But there are some better examples of how Vince has dealt with people who were stars outside of his system. I have to reach back to like 1991, though, to find an example that comes to mind for me, and that's Ric Flair. Ric Flair, the biggest star outside of his company, to at least the U.S. audience at that time, coming over from WCW to WF, and he was treated like a real star. He won the title within a year because he won the Royal Rumble in 1992. I think other examples that we could look to just to think about what kind of a star is he going to be. I think Rey Mysterio might be his ceiling. I don't see Cody being on the level of, let's say, Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar. What he should do, if he's still negotiating with WWE, is insist on being a part-timer and so that the TV, the way that you know Vince will conduct the TV will not overexpose him, and he will be treated as a special novelty like Brock Lesnar is, rather than something that Vince has a fascination with and maybe special attention for 3 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, and then loses his fascination with it. So there's the fleeting interest that Vince has with many things and the way that he changes his mind. And that's something to contend with. I think there's also, will Vince treat somebody who is a big deal in AEW, a bigger star outside of WWE, because he was outside of WWE, than he ever was inside WWE? And how will Vince book somebody who's a big star outside WWE? And we saw a lot of people within WWE system who were big stars within NXT move over to the main roster. And I believe Vince didn't want to sort of acknowledge their star power or invest in them because they were something created in Triple H's vision rather than his own vision of wrestling, and that there was somebody else that could be credited for their building up and their success. I think Cody will be viewed that way by Vince ultimately. And I think we can look to examples such as the way that the Invasion went in WCW 2001, or even before that, the way that Taz, in his, if people don't remember or weren't watching wrestling at that time, Taz signed with WWE, moved from ECW to WWE, did a quick, you know, showed up on an ECW show, won the title, I believe, from Mike Awesome. You might remember this better, Gullo. So he was signed to WWE, became the ECW champion, and then quickly on SmackDown, he's put in a match with Triple H so Triple H could beat him. I think Triple H was WWE champion at the time. So I think there will be some of that happening as well. We've got to beat him and show that somebody who wasn't even an AEW champion. And I mean, there was a stipulation where he couldn't go for the title, but somebody who wasn't even the AEW champion was one of their big stars. But we can't show that the AEW stars are neck and neck with our own top stars. We got to put him somewhere. I think his ceiling here is like Drew McIntyre, Rey Mysterio, something like that. Yes.
I have a comparison here, but I, you know, Mr. Warren Hayes actually did have a very interesting super chat. Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. This is a looking forward to Cody and Bruce butting heads reports. Super chat. So, yeah, their visions might be similar than people think, though. Who knows on that? But I do, my thought on this, and I know it's not a straight comparison because he wasn't an in-ring talent. He was a, you know, an on-screen character. But I would compare it to Eric Bischoff. And I would say that because Eric Bischoff pretty much created competition for Vince. Cody Rhodes went out there and created competition for Vince. Part of it, not the only one. Big deal when he first came, like, wow, this is a big thing. But then it was 3 to 4 years of how many times can we embarrass Eric Bischoff? Put him in this angle, you know what I mean? Like, have him make out with Mae Young and this and that. Like, and I feel Cody's going to get the big treatment right away. He's going to have probably a marquee WrestleMania match. And then it's going to kind of be storylines like that.
Yeah, it's and then more fully forming the notion that, you know, oh, what Vince really likes is humiliation comedy. That's his one of his favorite things. We might see this for people watching on YouTube. Goldberg in the wig. You had one of the simplest formulas in wrestling history, really. Just have him beat people. But Goldberg in his first run before he became somebody who was a part-time, I know he's probably part-time in his first run too. I think he had limited dates, but in his more recent run, I think he's been more protected and kept special because he's been even more limited and Vince sees him as somebody who is more overweight when rather than these kids today. But yeah, I think, so why has Cody decided to leave? Or maybe it's not completely all on his side. Maybe Tony wanted him to leave too. And we have Kenny kind of confirming it. And I don't know if there's been direct confirmation from Tony about this, but I think Meltzer has reported this, that there was an option that AEW Tony Khan could have exercised to extend Cody for, I don't know if it's a year or 2 years, but some substantial time beyond this time. That was not exercised, though. I'm guessing it's because he wasn't completely happy. He wanted something more or something different. I don't know if how much money played into this, but I think creative leadership played into this. And I think, you know, I think back to the All In post-show speech that they all did. Have you ever listened to that? Because I guess that was off the air. Have you ever listened to that, Cole?
No.
It's on YouTube.
I didn't listen to the post thing on that.
But it's kind of a stand. It's what you would expect it was. It's a big fired up speech. A clip of it played in the intro to this program just now. But AEW, the opportunity of AEW, you know, offered to Cody and the others who became executive vice presidents a chance to be in a company where they would have more control, or at least they would be assured that they w- would be more creatively fulfilled than they would be in WWE, which was probably the second most likely option other than starting AEW and taking this chance with Tony Khan. And it's funny that I at All In. So I was there and I was there with Mookie and nobody knew the initials AEW. The public didn't. I think they were working on the logos and whatnot at the time. But I was aware that something was happening and Mookie was working on stuff with Tony. And I remember having a conversation there that weekend and discussing like, well, you know, All In is sort of this setup. It's sort of a demo tape to show here's what we can do. And we did it by ourselves. And this is the kind of product that we can put on. And, you know, I guess one of the questions I think I was raising at the time, or we were discussing at the time, so, you know, sort of what happens when there are creative differences. I could see people like Kenny and the Bucks, you know, the producers of Being the Elite, having a different vision than this guy who's doing this Nick Aldis program right now. By December 2019, just a couple of months after Dynamite debuted on TNT, just following this poorly received angle involving the Dark Order, Tony decided to change creative leadership from being a collaborative effort with the EVPs and himself to being just his own project. As we heard in the intro, you know, Kenny, not confirming this, not that there was any doubt, but talking about how it's basically Tony's show. This was from an interview that he just did the other day with Wrestling Observer. The funny thing to me is that this Dark Order thing looks, if this, and I'm sure there were other events that led to this, but this was the final event that led to Tony taking complete control of creative. This seems like a Young Bucks creation or somebody else's creative effort, not Cody's, which leads to all of them, you know, they're being listened to. They can largely, I think, related to their own creative, have a lot of influence over that. But this angle that was probably not involving Cody is what leads to Cody losing the creative power that I think was really important to him. And that, you know, if he wants to be a booker like his dad was, that leads to him losing that opportunity. Now, obviously, you go to WWE, you're going to be under more control than ever, as far as Vince McMahon is going to, I can't imagine, like, Cody has set himself apart in the last couple of years by being such a strong promo. And I can't imagine that translating to WWE. I don't even believe that this is so much a skill that he has developed in the last few years, as much as I think it was a skill that he had or innate ability that he had. I mean, people can think about like what year was Dusty inducted into the Hall of Fame, and everybody responded to, you know, Cody, who had, you know, was not even a wrestler at that time, right? For having given this great speech, inducting his dad into the Hall of Fame. So I don't think that being capable of a really good promo is a skill that Cody has recently developed. I think it's something that he has long had, and he had while he was in WWE in the first place. He had it while he was in AEW. He will have it in this likely upcoming run with WWE, and I don't see how he's going to come across as a great promo there, because almost no one comes across as a great promo in WWE, which is, like, I think by far his greatest strength. He's capable of good matches too, but more so it's his promo ability that sets him apart. So there's those things. Maybe also what's driving this is the downfall of influence of Triple H falling out of influence. Maybe falling out of favor, maybe after his cardiac event, taking a step back to reconsider his priorities. In any event, clearly out of influence in NXT relative to the black and gold era. And then just after Royal Rumble, Shane McMahon falling out of favor, sent home. Who knows what the details really are of Shane McMahon's recent issues with WWE / his father, Vince. But Shane McMahon seems to issues between Vince and Shane professionally seem to be re-aggravated. Maybe there's an opening there for Cody to come in and not just be maybe a major star for WWE, but maybe develop into some kind of person of influence behind the scenes as well. Cody has obviously been very active with the Nightmare Factory, which he, I believe, runs along with QT Marshall. I think he saw his role in AEW as somebody who was very much developing other talent, both in terms of, you know, helping them hands on and in terms of working with them on screen to help them get over. He helped a number of wrestlers get over in his last match in AEW. Is that where he put over Sammy Guevara? So that's what I think is motivating that. I think Brandi Rhodes is an issue too. Really for all five of them, what I've called the original sin of AEW is that part of what helped convince those four or five key people to take the chance with AEW is that you promised them not just probably great pay, but you promised them some influence, an executive position, which also gave them benefits. And doing that, you took five people who had no experience being corporate leaders, and you made them corporate leaders in a startup company. But you made Brandi Rhodes a very key person in this company, and she always had to have an on-screen role. That she was not necessarily... I think Brandi Rhodes doesn't know how to get the most out of her abilities. And if you've been watching the wrestling news over the last few days, you've seen reports that lots of people didn't like Brandi Rhodes. A few of her friends on Twitter quickly coming to her defense. But I think that was an issue also. Remember the Nightmare Collective? Good times. So there's all those things happening. It's probably a relief for many people in AEW, including leadership, to not have to worry about that anymore. That we have to find something for Brandi. This brings to mind, the issue of Cody being received with boos lately. That brings to mind Rhodes to the Top. So the timing of Rhodes to the Top and the timing of Cody starting to get audible boos is not exactly coinciding, but it's close. I think he'd started to get booed just before Rhodes to the Top hit the air. But so first of all, Rhodes to the Top, now there's a big question as far as, well, I guess it's not too much of a question. I don't think that show is going to continue to exist. There was a report from the Observer in November that Rhodes to the Top was renewed for a second season. And Fightful Sean Ross Sapp has mentioned that he's tried to confirm that with AEW. He's tried to confirm that with TNT. He was not able to do so. I question whether that show was really renewed. That being said, how big of a deal is it to AEW's TV partner, by far the biggest source of its revenue, Turner, Warner Media? How big of a deal is it to that network that this guy who is on not just Rhodes to the Top, which may or may not have had another season, how big of a deal is it that, you know, he's not going to be there for maybe that and the Go Big Show series that he was appearing on as well?
Which he's still actively promoting.
Yeah,
this week I saw on Twitter he retweeted the Go Big stuff.
I think they're in the middle of that season.
Yeah.
There were ads for it during Dynamite. one of the biggest values that a wrestling program or any program can have to its network is that, hey, we can drive viewership. We're not just airing our show, but with our show and with our talent, we're going to be able to drive viewership to other shows on the network, including Go Big Show, including Roads to the Top. It's a synergistic effect. So that's lessened with the exit of Cody. Question I don't know the answer to. How do network executives feel about this? Cody's not with you anymore. He was our guy who was helping drive viewership to the Go Big Show. He's our guy who's maybe going to do another season of Roads to the Top. I don't know. Is something going to replace Roads to the Top that is an AEW program? Which it was. It was an AEW program. That was obviously on TNT. We'll see. Roads to the Top, I think Cody and Brandy did not come off well on. I think, you know, some reality programs like The Ultimate Fighter, that helped usher in a huge period of business for UFC, from which it has never fallen from, in 2005, in a similar situation where they had a lead in from a wrestling program. I think they came off as lacking in self-awareness on that show. And it happened at the same time that Cody was apparently lacking self-awareness in how to deal with this issue where he's being booed by the fans. I was one person who thought that he was actually ahead of the curve when this first started to happen. And as time went on, I became less sure of that. I thought that, you know, he was in control of this situation and that he was really going to make it work out creatively, but that never happened. And now he's out of AEW, and then, you know, it never happened. I figured maybe there was like a Bret in Canada type thing happening or something where it was all going to fit together somehow. You know, in wrestling and like in media generally, you want to be a little bit ahead of the curve. You want to be a little bit smarter than your audience. You don't want to be way smarter than your audience, though. You don't want to be too far ahead of the curve. You know, whether it's wrestling or media or investment, you don't want to be 20 years ahead of technology and making investments, even if your predictions turn out to be right. If you're 20 years ahead of the curve, you're going to be not optimally investing your resources. And you don't want to be behind the curve either. And I think WWE creatively, you know, Vince is hopelessly behind the curve, but he's got so many revenue sources that are guaranteed. That's all kind of obfuscated because he has extremely powerful name ID that's been stored up over the decades, that he can continue to produce creative that's well behind the curve. We may touch on that later when we talk about the WWE estimate. And I think AEW is, for the most part, in the right place. Execution is a different question, but being ahead of the curve, understanding their audience, at least as well as the audience understands itself, AEW's there. In the last few months, Cody has fallen behind that in terms of not knowing how to work the fans, and sort of doing weird things like in this final promo in January, you know, sort of breaking the fourth wall and shouting about how he won't, you know, why I won't turn heel, which I don't know that there's ever a good reason to do, in the in-ring content. Go ahead.
Well, that I want to bring up a point. And this is where, you know, I think speculations of maybe this wasn't Cody's decision to leave AEW, because going to WWE, it's Vince at the day end all be all when it comes to creative. No matter what the creative team comes up with, you, no matter what a, you know, a producer might think is good, or whatever the talent thinks is good, it's at the end of the day, it's what Vince thinks is good. And here's a guy that, you know, probably had a lot of pushback for turning heel. I mean, I don't know if Tony Khan had this thought, but Tony Khan probably thought maybe a heel, or maybe like a Homelander on The Boys type scenario where the guy thinks he's a baby face, but really he's actually a heel. You know, it might have been type of like that type of situation. Yeah. In WWE, if Vince goes, you're going to be a heel, and he goes, no, he's like, no, you're going to be a heel. There is going to be no, like, he's just going to have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he'll probably have more trouble being listened to and having his influence make it to the screen. To touch back on, does Cody, is part of the attraction of going, I think what's happening here is, you know, he thought he was going to have not just creative freedom here in AEW, but creative leadership. That fell away by December 2019. I don't think he has any illusions that he's going to have a great deal of creative freedom in WWE, but at least that's the deal. And maybe there's a way for him to grow as a behind the scenes person. If there is a vacancy of power for a position that maybe Triple H is less occupying, maybe that happens. But I think the people who are thriving politically in WWE right now are the people who are most aligned with Vince's vision, of, in this case, creative. And I don't see Cody's vision as aligned with Vince's vision creatively. I see, if anything, Kenny and the Young Bucks vision being closer, not exactly, but closer to Vince's vision in terms of the whimsy and the greater acceptance, openness to comedy and things like that. And from my impression is that Cody favors strong dramatic promos, more sports-like wrestling, the kind of thing that we saw in the Nick Aldis program. I don't think that will be received favorably in the political landscape of WWE. I could see Cody thinking he can make it work though, because people who are big stars often believe in themselves to a great degree, far beyond the level that others believe in them. I think as time goes on, Vince doesn't become less Vince. Vince becomes more Vince and more rigid in making exceptions for how he's going to change. I think we're at 42 minutes here. I was telling you if we go under an hour, you'll do Jeopardy. And now, good Lord.
Well, because we got a super chat from Timby, and I have another question too. The post you after
go,
that.
Go ahead.
Well, we'll start with the Timby super chat. Thank you, Tim. When Chicago threw the weight belt back was when Cody either lost control or it became apparent that he was out of touch of how he was viewed.
Thanks for a super chat. I don't remember that moment, but when was that? Do you know, Gullo, or maybe Tim B can tell us in the chat?
Tim probably tell us, but I think it was a few months ago.
Yes,
I want to say they've been in Chicago a lot. So
yes, something else we'll talk about too. They've been to a lot of the same cities quite often. I think that's everything that I wanted to say about this. I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but I've listened to a lot of people talk about this topic. Obviously, it's been huge news. And there's always like 17 things. I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta remember to talk about that too. But yeah, I think that's everything.
I do have one more question. So now I'm looking for the WWE side of you with this, right? Obviously, this is big news. You would use him to pop a rating, you would think. I know they think different than AEW when it comes to that, but do you just have him show up? Do you promote it like, hey, Cody Rhodes will be on SmackDown, Cody Rhodes will be on Raw, or hey, we have a mystery partner and this and that? Like, I mean, as soon as The Miz cut his promo yesterday at Elimination Chamber, people thought it was Cody, and now we're hearing reports that it's Logan Paul that will be his tag partner against the Mysterios. But I mean, WWE's got to capitalize on this, right? I mean, this would probably be a nice way to kind of pop a rating, help that average for the year.
The great problem in talking about what's going to happen in WWE on screen is like, you naturally think about, wow, how could they get the most out of this? And that's a totally different thing from what they will do, because you're basing yourself, your thoughts from a position of how can they get the most interest out of this? How can it be the most exciting? And Vince and WWE probably think they are too, but there's a lot of politics and ego that come into play. what should happen? Yeah, they should I don't know, debut him as soon as possible and have him go face to face with Roman Reigns. I don't know. What will happen? Probably not that. You know, like I said, I think more likely is that they will feel that they have to build him down, you know, break him down to build, you know, to build him back up. AJ Styles is an example of somebody who made his name outside of WWE and did actually get debuted on the main roster without having to go to NXT. Even Drew McIntyre had to go back to NXT, remember? But AJ Styles is somebody who I think they sort of brought into some fanfare, quickly broke him down. And then he eventually, though, he did get built back up. He did end up becoming WWE champion and had a top program with Roman Reigns. And now, you know, as he's getting a bit older, he's sort of in the middle again, but whatever. But, you know, I think, what was your question again? Did I answer it?
I mean, yeah, it was just basically like, you know, how could WWE capitalize on this? But like you said, like, they don't sometimes think that way. But I mean, I would say a ratings wise, especially, you know, you had a couple weeks that you were on Sci-Fi. So that's obviously going to drop your average on Raw and your 18 to 49. Maybe this would have been something that, hey, they promote next couple weeks.
They should bring him in and go face. Let's, I don't know. This is just a random idea I just thought about in the last 5 seconds. If you bring him in, he goes face to face with Roman Reigns. He wants a title match with Roman Reigns. Somebody else prevents this from happening. And then he works a program with that person. And then maybe we're going towards Reigns, because Reigns has got to finish up with Lesnar first. Oh my God. We're fantasy booking on WrestleNomics. This has got to stop. Something like that could happen. But what's going to happen is some, you know, Vince or somebody who's playing to Vince's insecurities is going to point out that, well, if we do that, we're going to make it look like AEW people are on the same level as the top WWE people. And that'll be bad for us. And Vince will be convinced of that and will buy that. And something lesser will happen with him. Yeah, that's what I think will happen. As others have pointed out, this is a really important moment for WWE to show that if you're in AEW, you come to WWE, we're going to do great things with you. This is a moment where they should be concerned with proving that to talent in AEW who are open to the idea of being in WWE someday and who aren't that sure whether they want to go to WWE because they think they're probably not going to be creatively fulfilled, but they will not have their career developed. This is WWE's opportunity to prove them wrong and to prove that WWE is the place to be. I have no faith that Vince will ease that perception. I do have this slide too. Just quickly, this is a chance for WWE to change the narrative too when it comes to some degree fan perception. Not that they really care about that in this regard, but to any business partners or investors who are asking about AEW, what's going on with this Dynamite show that's, I guess, doing similar 18 to 49 viewership as Raw? What's going on with that? And you've got talent like Jon Moxley and Chris Jericho and CM Punk and Bryan Danielson, all of whom used to be with your company, and they're going over to that company. Why is there this exodus of talent from WWE to AEW? Is it like this better place to be or something? And now finally WWE will be able to say, no, it's not all one way. We've got at least one person coming our way. It reminds me of how the flow of talent often reflects the flow of popularity, or at least the trajectory of popularity. WF losing its lead in popularity to WCW in the mid-90s as the flow of talent went from WF to WCW. Most memorably, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Lex Luger going back. Those are the ones that come to mind first. And then later in the Attitude Era, as the Monday Night War was more decisively in WF's favor, Jericho, Benoit, Malenko, Guerrero moving from WCW to WF. And this is, I think, as we've seen, you know, AEW definitely I see AEW and Stardom as the only two companies that I can see globally that have any positive momentum. I'm not talking about finances here. I've been looking at WF logos right now. WWE obviously has positive momentum. We're going to talk about that in a moment before we run out of time here. But in terms of consumer interest, AEW and Stardom are the only ones that I see have clearly positive consumer interest, and AEW still does. I don't know what the ceiling is for AEW, but it's I'm still seeing Google web search positive year-over-year comparisons here. And I think there's a lot of brand equity and name equity for them to solidify still. But anyway, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, a lot of talent going from WWE to AEW, and that coinciding with upward trajectory for AEW and WWE, much more wealthy company, downward trajectory in consumer interest. This, as WWE loves to do, or at least is highly benefited from, this obfuscates the narrative.
I know I'm just bringing up one more topic on this, but it coincides with what you're talking about, the flow of talent, right? So when a lot of people leave a company, especially if they're like an executive or somebody, you know, higher up, there's a clause where you can't take away, you know, certain people can't jump with you. Now, obviously it's a little different wrestling because there's contracts, but do we see now, you know, of course we got a lot of renewals coming up. Do we see a lot of AEW talent that were Cody's like vision of the roster? Cause you can kind of tell who's a Cody person, who's a Bucks person, who's a Kenny person, as far as people they push for by their social media, whatnot, history, all that. Do we see some of those Cody talents maybe possibly going to WWE?
Maybe. I would have to have a stronger sense of how deep the loyalties are. I mean, like, I don't know who those people are beyond Brandy and QT Marshall. And I mean, I don't think WWE is interested in either of them.
The production team, not that they would have jumped into WWE, but the production team was a Cody thing through DDP.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a couple others. I think Justin Roberts might've been a Cody Rhodes push too. And
yeah, I mean, WWE's,
this is all speculation.
Right. I mean, for Justin Roberts, WWE had their time with Justin Roberts and he left there with not a completely positive story to tell. Tim B points out it was Thanksgiving Eve when the weight belt was thrown back. So thanks for that. Okay. I think I've said everything I need to say about Cody.
All right. We will move on to WWE and stock prices. As of close on Friday, $58.55 for WWE shares, performing very well as of late.
You're not a WWE shareholder?
I am not. No.
I am not either. Never have been. So the stock price has been doing really well since the earnings call on February 3rd. This is on YouTube, a chart looking at the last month and comparing it to the S&P 500, which is in the last 30 days, I believe, is what we're looking at here. The S&P 500 has been down 4%. It's not been a good time in the stock market. WWE stock, however, over the same course of time, the last 30 days, up nearly 14%, 13.9%. That means if you invested $100 in WWE stock 1 month ago, you now have about $114. So a good return over a short period of time where now the market, MJ just put in a super chat. You see that pop up on the screen? We'll address that in a moment. But the stock market finally having some confidence in this stock for some reason. I've asked people, including people who are invested in WWE, why this is. I don't see what a clear answer is, though. So I wrote my estimate of WWE looking forward into the next year or two. That is on Patreon now for subscribers. It will be on WrestleNomics.com soon. So if you want to read it right now, sign up to the Patreon. But yeah, we will talk about that now, though. It's not that big of a change as far as what I think the future of this company is. They're going to break their financial records in 2022. They're going to at least come close in the year after that, because largely because of guaranteed escalating TV rights fees. And I think I made you read this, Gull. So what did you think of this estimate report?
So just kind of reading it, I mean, you played a good side, because clearly, you know, the TV deal and all that, that's good. It's probably going to be more profitable than what it is right now, just because of TV rights. But linear TV is decreasing as it's an older audience, and is streaming. And I talked to you about this off air, the streaming perspective would be going to a network that also has a streaming platform, a large scale streaming platform, would probably be the best move for WWE. And I mean, NBC Universal with Peacock is one that comes to mind. So, but you kind of also brought up the perspective of the big three that don't really have, you know, Apple, Amazon, and Netflix, that don't really have a network.
So let me explain my assumption here. So part of what I write about in here is that, think about, and I don't think we've talked about this in that much detail yet here on WrestleNomics Radio. But I've talked with a lot of people about this subject. I think you think about when this deal ends, this current set of US TV deals that WWE has for Raw and SmackDown, they end the end of September 2024. The last two rounds of deals that they've done have been for either 4 or 5 years. So that's a good indication of what the following deal would be. So that means we would have let's say it's 4 years, 5 years. That means we've got a deal going from October 2024 to fall of 2028, or maybe 2029. So we're talking about the late 20s here. Finally, I can say a decade. It'll be very clear what I mean. I can say the 20s rather than the 10s or the teens or the aughts or whatever it is. Anyway, what are the late 20s going to be like as far as media consumption? Nielsen posts its gauge donut chart every month, which I love. Streaming is at 28% of total TV time in the United States. Only 28%. It's less than probably most people think. But it's growing, and linear is falling. But linear still makes up like 67% of the TV time. But that said, my big question is around reach. Reach, what does that mean? Fox has really strong reach because it's in basically every TV home, because it's through the antenna, it's broadcast TV. Big cable networks like USA and TNT and TBS are in about 80 million homes. That number will decrease over time, and has been decreasing over time, because cord cutting is happening and people are coming of age who are moving into their own household. They're young people. We're never going to subscribe to cable. And obviously people are getting old and passing away, and those subscriptions are going away. So as that number of homes that USA Network is in, that even Fox is in, decreases, and this is something for AEW to think about too, but is being on linear TV going to be enough reach through the late 20s? And as that streaming share gets bigger and that linear share gets smaller, why is reach important to a wrestling company, Chris Gullo?
Well, popularity. I mean, the aspect of other revenue. If you have higher reach, first off, then the streaming network, cable network, whatever, is going to want to even, you know, while the popularity continues.
But why is popularity important?
Popularity is important because it is why people will invest in your product when it comes to e-commerce sales and you know, live events, but to a smaller detail in WWE now. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to get the fan to spend money, right?
I would argue that reach, nationwide reach, is more important to WWE than it is to any team in the NFL, the NHL, and the NBA. Most games in those sports, in those leagues, are regional broadcasts. And the NFL is maybe a little more complicated. But certainly in the case of the NBA, the MLB, the NHL, most of those games are regional broadcasts that are not broadcast to the rest of the nation. Only special, high-profile games are. And WWE needs to be on high-reach national TV on a weekly basis so that it can support its live events business and its consumer products business. Businesses that are making up a shrinking minority of their revenue as media becomes more and more valuable, but they need to sell tickets and they need to sell merchandise and they need to sell video games and action figures and make other favorable deals with product licensees, or is it licensors? Anyway, you know what I mean.
And that's been Nick Khan's thing too. Is yes. How do we license the IP as much as possible? I mean, we're seeing all these deals.
Just made an autograph deal with some company.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. Just another deal they just got.
I went to their website. It didn't look like the most advanced website, but they made a deal with an autograph company. But anyway, yeah, selling tickets is important. Selling merchandise is important, and being an attractive licensor of IP is important. And if your only distribution is linear, that's good enough right now. I mean, and we're talking, to be clear, obviously, you can view WWE core content on Hulu and you can view WWE core content on YouTube and throughout social media to an extent. But I'm talking about live. Is being on a streaming service like Hulu or wherever those rights end up this year. Is being on YouTube and social media enough digital distribution to achieve the reach that is optimal for their business? Or do they need live rights? And can they sell favorably live rights to someone? Now, who would it be? I don't see the rights to Raw, for example, being on Amazon Prime Live and being on the USA Network. I think that pits Amazon against USA Network, and maybe what happens, there's too much risk there because maybe the linear viewership really goes away and then USA Network, NBCU, is left holding this empty bag, or behavior sort of plateaus and stops at a certain point and Amazon is left perhaps not having the engagement that it thought it would have. So much more likely outcome, I think, is, for example, Raw being renewed, in all likelihood it will be, with NBC Universal, and maybe live rights, maybe not every week, maybe only select weeks at first, maybe more weeks later in the deal, maybe being live on Peacock as well. So I see the linear network and the same parent owning the streaming network. And as I wrote, things can change if, for example, let's say Amazon buys a broadcast company. But what you were getting at is that, well, Nick Khan gets on these earnings calls and hypes how Netflix, it's only a matter of time before they come for those sports rights. Apple, it's only a matter, they're already rumored to be interested in a variety of different sports rights.
Amazon just got NFL.
But I think in WWE's case, it's a different thing than, let's take Amazon, right? Amazon is going to have the Thursday night football games this next season, correct?
Yes.
All the other games are still going to be on linear, and to an extent, I think you'll be able to watch the NBC broadcasts on Peacock. I watched the CBS broadcasts on Paramount. But they're distributed across all these different networks too. But the FANGs don't own a linear distribution partner. I don't see in the next round Raw or SmackDown rights being dealt exclusively to a streaming partner. That's not going to happen. They'll be dealt to somebody who's on traditional television, whether it's cable or broadcast. But none of the fangs, Apple doesn't own a linear TV network, cable or broadcast. Amazon doesn't. Netflix doesn't. Google doesn't. Facebook doesn't. And it's questionable whether they, if they, even if they really, really wanted to, whether they could get that past antitrust right now. But maybe, maybe Amazon, and I think Nick Khan told Colin Cowherd in that interview, he thinks that Amazon will acquire a major network. Maybe there's talk that maybe Comcast wants to spin out NBCU, just like we saw AT&T spin out Warner Media. Maybe something like that happens. And then that would make more sense to, you know, but then you've got a parent company that's got two streaming platforms in terms of Amazon Prime and Peacock. So who knows how that plays out. But yeah, that's what I see happening. And I see W making a lot more money, even as its consumer interest continues to wane. We're seeing ticket sales. We can at least back to where they were pre-pandemic. I'm seeing some questionable things happening in Q4 in terms of e-commerce sales, where the average revenue per order is up, but the number of orders in Q4 was well down from the last pre-pandemic Q4, holiday season and all that. Google web search, still not that encouraging. On a worldwide basis, it's down in January. On a U.S. basis, dead even. So maybe that's encouraging. Maybe we're seeing the plateau of the drainage.
MJ Super Chat was just kind of talking about a little popularity. He said he got together with three friends to watch Chamber. Their interest in WWE highest since they went to Mania in 2019. Are extremely casual fans. Anadol, of course, I think you might as well do it. Hey, Cody, there was all the Cody to Saudi Arabia talks that Kenny Omega even said. Yes. I think he's on a flight to Saudi Arabia. So who knows? Maybe this Cody news helps a little bit with popularity and Google Trends and whatnot.
Yes, maybe. Thank you for the super chat, MJ. That's a good transition point. Abysmal rating for AEW this week. I already talked about it quite a bit on live TV ratings talk, but so let's not dwell on it. Big Bang Theory had its lowest lead-in ever on TBS before Dynamite. That did result in AEW's lowest Dynamite on TBS ever. Was that because of Cody? I don't know. I doubt it. The weeks, the time will tell. We'll see. We can move on to this live event note here.
Yeah, I'll just to talk about the downwards and the ratings. I think, if I could be wrong, I think there was a huge hot Olympic hockey game that night. Well, I could be wrong.
On what it did, I looked at this. The Olympics have been doing abysmal numbers. What they did on Wednesday, what the Olympics did on Wednesday was lower than what it did on Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
It was lower than what it did on Monday. The NBA games were a little bit higher than usual, but I don't see any excuses in the competition. I see the external factor of a weaker lead-in than usual. Yeah, but still, this was worse than some of their final ratings on TNT when they had where even this week's instance of a lead-in from the Big Bang Theory was much stronger than what they would have had in those movies that were on at 7:30 on TNT.
All right, but yeah, we will move on to ticket news here. It has been announced that Wednesday, May 11th, in Long Island at the UBS Arena, AEW returns. Remember how well they did as far as ticket sales last time. It's going to be a Dynamite and a Rampage in the beginning of the Owen Hart tournament.
Yes. These are all of AEW's upcoming dates, I think, that we know of. Why don't you run through those cities real quick?
Yeah, so February 23rd in Bridgeport, March 2nd in Jacksonville, March 4th in Orlando, March 6th in Orlando. That's Revolution Weekend and Rampage Revolution. Then we have March 9th in Estero, Florida, March 16th in San Antonio, Texas, March 23rd in Cedar Park, March 30th in Columbia, South Carolina, April 6th in Boston, April 13th in New Orleans, Louisiana, and May 11th in Long Island, New York.
You sound like Excalibur there, having to run through all those dates. yes. So what do we notice about all those dates? They're Louisiana. Let's see. Where is Louisiana relative to the Mississippi? Louisiana is west of the Mississippi. But here we have Texas. They've been to 7 times. Tons of dates in Florida, of course, because of Jacksonville. But other places in Florida too, including Orlando, which is where you just mentioned the pay-per-view is going to be. 10 dates in Illinois, in Chicago. 2 in Minnesota, 3 in Missouri. The most Western states that they've been to, and they've only been in the United States, have never been to Canada, have never been anywhere overseas. Three shows that they've done in these most Western states of Colorado, Utah, which I think they went to Salt Lake City just before the pandemic. And they've done only one event in Las Vegas. Is that right? That's the pre-pandemic Double or Nothing. And then didn't you go back to Vegas yet?
I didn't
make a mistake there.
No, because 2021 would have been right before live touring. So I think you're accurate in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they're probably
returning in 22, but I don't know this year.
I would expect that. Yeah. I would expect it to be in Las Vegas this year. But have never been to California, have never been to Oregon, have never been to Washington State.
Which is a surprise to me, because if you look at the independent wrestling style coming out of California and Portland and Washington, it's very similar to what you're seeing on AEW, and a lot of current AEW stars are showcased in places out there like Defy and West Coast Pro and PWG and, you know, a Prestige, and you can go on and on and on.
Yeah, I think the first show in California to see the Young Bucks is a big deal. To see Darby in Darby's from Seattle area, I think. So to see Luther in Oregon, right? Big local drum. Anyway, I looked at this W since the return to touring, W did one set of house shows in California, and they just did a SmackDown in LA, right? So W since the return to touring has been to California a bit, but AEW not. And I did ask about this, and I was told that it has to do with the timing, where, you know, if you do a show with an 8 p.m. live start time, that's 5 p.m. local. And then you have to open the doors at 3 or 4 p.m. local time. And it's the middle of the week on a Wednesday in their case. And going to California, for example, is a far distance from the rest of the U.S. So you'd want to schedule it somehow to be, you know, nearby other events that you're running to minimize the expense. But I do expect them to go to these states eventually. I just thought it was remarkable that, you know, we can continue to see the same venues announced but still have not been to certain areas in the U.S. I think there's big business to be done, and I'm sure AEW is aware there's big business to be done whenever AEW goes to, let's say, Toronto for the first time, or goes to the UK for the first time. Maybe there are travel restrictions delaying those things from becoming possible still. But hopefully COVID cases continue to fall. Hopefully. Been saying that for a long time though.
All right. We will move on here. You want to lead them right to Elimination Chamber, kind of go, I know you had some YouTube stuff listed, but I don't know if you just want to skip that for now.
That's fine. Elimination Chamber. Did you watch the Elimination Chamber? What were your professional wrestling media content consumption habits this week, Chris Gola? What did you consume?
I did not consume anything until Elimination Chamber.
You didn't watch AEW Dynamite this week?
Not this week. No.
No wonder the rating was down. No wonder the ratings are down. How old are you?
I am 34.
You're pulling down the 18 to 34.
Yeah, this week I just had a lot of stuff going on, so I didn't get to watch that. I didn't really get to watch anything. But Saturday I finally had some free time. I didn't have a show this weekend, so I was curious to see how it would be. I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched a couple matches more towards the end of the show. Brock Lesnar beats everybody. That's pretty much the theme of everything.
Do you know who has beaten every African-American W champion? The main W title, not the other, not the World Heavyweight Championship, not the Universal Championship. Who has beaten every WWE African-American champion?
Brock Lesnar.
I spent most of that time tweeting charts. $350 million now is roughly the amount that Saudi Arabia has, or that W has collected from the government of Saudi Arabia. That is more than every WrestleMania ticket sale ever combined, adjusted for inflation. That is twice as much as AEW's current deal, four-year deal with Warner Media. That is a little bit more than the entire market capital. This is just to put this in context. I have not looked at the responses to this tweet, but I imagine some people are upset. But anyway, this $350 million is just below, in fact, the entire market capital, the entire value, according to the stock market, of Bushiroad. Bushiroad, as listeners will know, is the parent company of New Japan Pro Wrestling, of Stardom. But those two companies are only about 15% of Bushiroad's revenue. So it includes all the anime things and gaming things that they do. If we take all of the money that New Japan has generated since Okada has been on top for New Japan, since Okada confronted Hiroshi Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom 2012, all of the revenue, put it all together, that's less. That's about $300 million. That's less than WWE has generated from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I estimated a couple of years ago, it would probably cost, to be really aggressive, because I wanted to see if WWE could afford it or not. I estimated, I was really aggressive on all the lines, and I got to something like $28 million per year it would cost WWE to convert all of their independent contractor wrestlers to employees. And I was told that this was insanely high. I think Dave wrote in the Observer. so they could, since 2018, if they converted all of their wrestlers from independent contractors to employees, it would cost them certainly less than $125 million for every year, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021. That would be a fraction of the revenue that they've generated from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So probably within the operating income of those events. It hit me the other night too, reading the Phil Mickelson news about how he's considering going to play golf for this Saudi Arabian government league rather than the PGA. Spending $110 million every year, $110 million every year, that's probably what AEW is spending. That's probably in the neighborhood of what AEW is spending. When people ask, is AEW profitable? If we exclude that big gaming investment, who knows what the value of that is? Something like $10 million. But other than that, as far as what we might think of as the traditional wrestling expenses, the Saudi government is spending on WWE probably in the neighborhood of what AEW is spending to run itself. They could have... And this started in 2018. Think about the timing here; it's kind of funny. They could have just started AEW or something. I mean, obviously, you would have to have leadership and connections and things like that that Tony Khan was able to provide in addition to billions of dollars. But anyway, yeah.
I will say this, maybe because it's finally catching on, but watching the crowd in the chamber, I think this is the most excited I've ever seen them.
The audience?
Yes, the fan base.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. I heard that they were hot for some of it, though.
Yeah, I'll never forget the guys just in the front on their cell phones like the whole time. Like,
and didn't they have furniture out there in front for one of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you have escaped WrestleNomics Jeopardy for the fifth consecutive week, I think. I do have the PowerPoint right here. I will not open it right now because I want to give you an advanced start to study the questions. I don't want this to be like quiz show where you get the questions in advance. I watched quiz show this past week. Have you ever watched the movie Quiz Show?
Yeah, it's been a while, but yes.
The 1994
film. That's the 1950s video or game show scandal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, this is about pro wrestling. This is about like who we want our top babyface to be. This is about Bryan Danielson and Roman Reigns, I think. Ray Fiennes playing the role of Roman Reigns and John Turturro playing the role of Bryan Danielson. Yes. Anyway, I think that's all for this week. Anything else to add?
Nope. Just that pro wrestling industry report. It's out there. It's very, very detailed.
Yeah. Have you looked at it now?
I've looked at it. Yes.
Okay.
I have looked at it.
You looked at all 71 pages of key metrics analysis and insights for major pro wrestling companies.
I've probably not read every single word, but I've looked at it.
There's really not that many words to read.
Yeah. So it's a lot of charts.
It's mostly charts. And then it's just some thoughts on the outlook of pro wrestling. Yeah. That's there on PayUp. And I think the link is in the description of both your podcast and your video that you might be listening to / watching. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up, and that helps us. That helps our algorithm, and helps people discover WrestleNomics. Share it, subscribe to the channel. There's merch at store.postwrestling.com. I'll be back on Thursday with live TV ratings talk right on the WrestleNomics YouTube channel, and the audio will be there for patrons. Also, we are predicting the P18-49 rating for Dynamite every week in the WrestleNomics Discord channel. Everybody was wrong this week. I don't think anybody got it. The 0.31, the disastrous 0.31. We'll see if it's better next week. Thanks as always to Post Wrestling for being our excellent distribution partner. What's new?
Yeah, you can check Rediscovering Indies out this week. Later this week, we'll have a new episode. We're recording on actually Tuesday, so we'll probably have it later on in the week. We're going to start a deep dive into Burt Prentice's independent wrestling promotions. So we're not going to talk much about his like USWA managing career and all that, but discuss the independent wrestling promotions that he ran, because he ran quite a few around different parts of the country.
Burt Prentice. Looking forward to it. Yes. As always, you can sign up to the WrestleNomics Patreon. I think we are approaching our record for most patrons in a month here. We might be breaking the record. So thanks to everyone for being a patron and signing up. You get access to the daily TV ratings reports every weekday. There's a new TV ratings report because every weekday there is pro wrestling on TV, so I have to report on the ratings. You get access to the giant WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. You get access to the audio of live TV ratings talk, and occasionally you get other stuff like my estimate. It's probably worth thousands to some investors, but you get it all for just $5 a month. And I think that's all. Thanks to everybody for your generous super chats today. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. We will talk to you next time.